Welcome to the Georgia Department of Education's first podcast on cultural responsiveness. We have all worked across the state of Georgia to highlight the needs of our students and to try to meet all of those needs. Georgia is one of the most diverse school systems, the Georgia school system, all across the state of Georgia in the nation. And while we have worked hard to build an awareness for our teachers, build an awareness for those of us who work at the Department of Education, we still have a lot of work to do. Mary Jean Banter and I'm Gail Humble, represent the College Readiness and Talent Development Department at the Georgia Department of Education. And we're here this morning to share with you the wonderful expertise and knowledge of several of our district leaders across our state. We have a working committee on cultural responsiveness as a part of our gifted task force, and we've been talking for several months about the needs of our students and how best to meet those needs. So that's going to be our discussion this morning. Mary Jean is going to introduce you to our panel.
We're just so glad to have these experts with us this morning, and I want to introduce them. We have Quayle Arnold, who is the coordinator for gifted and talented education for APS Atlanta Public Schools. We have Dr. Martha Cantrell, who is the Gifted Program and College Planning Coordinator for Habersham County Schools. Dr. Lisa Hagney, who is the Director of School Support at Dalton Public Schools. And Donna Marshall, the Director of Assessment for Colquitt County Schools. So we are very blessed to have people from around the state to share with us about cultural responsiveness.
As we start off this morning, we want to kind of frame our thoughts before we get into some depth of discussion. And the first question I would like to ask is, do you think that our gifted classrooms reflect our student body? And how do we determine whether they do reflect our student body or not?
I think the first thing you should do when you're looking at your district numbers, looking at your numbers for your gifted population, as well as those ethnicities in which they represent, and then comparing that to your district numbers. It's not always evident that they're reflective and mimic each other in the gifted classrooms and in your schools, but taking the time to look at that and making sure that you are somewhere near that area. And if you're not, think about how you can target schools, target areas of concern by highlighting and teachers going in with your gifted resource teachers going in and doing some talent development, targeting those demographics and providing opportunities for professional learning to teach teachers what to look for in order of gifted characteristics for students.
Good points.
One thing I would like to say is when I think about looking at your numbers and what you can do to ensure that you're meeting all of those populations, Sally Crissell said something, and it has stuck with me from the very first Gifted Task Force meeting. She talked about universal screeners. Screeners are essential for a viable and sustainable gifted program. We should constantly be looking at our students district-wide and providing those opportunities to pick up students that we miss in those little pockets, because not all teachers have the understanding of those unusual characteristics and the nature and needs of gifted kids and what students, those atypical students in our classroom, they're not your traditional type of student. And it's just that education of going in there and being creative and innovative.
And also, when you think about your gifted classrooms, the advanced content models and the collaboration models allow for reflective student bodies inside of the gifted classroom. So most times, and of course we know with gifted identification, that there is a huge number of underrepresentation. But if we combine classrooms and we seek out that talent and possibly identify students who may not be gifted identified but could meet the academic challenges that a gifted classroom offers, then you may begin to see some of your gifted classrooms be reflective of your overall student body.
Okay, good thoughts to lead us into our next question.
Now, we've had several discussions about the role of cultural responsiveness that it can play in supporting our achievement among diverse student populations. And while there are numerous definitions and interpretations of what it means to be culturally responsive, let's talk about how we can frame our focus on culturally responsive teaching in a way that can impact instructional practices in our classrooms.
As we've had our discussions, we really wanted to focus on how can we develop independent learning skills to help students develop those habits of mind and cognitive skills that will lead to success in advanced academic work. So there are a lot of different definitions. In gifted education, we talk a lot about self-regulation, George Betts' autonomous learning. Many of us have read Carol Dweck's Mindset, where we learn or we understand the way we respond to students can have a huge impact on how they view learning. So we've really settled on a definition that's been proposed by Zaretta Hammond in her book, Cultural Responsive Teaching and the Brain. Our understanding, as we begin to understand the neuroscience of learning, the role that the release of chemicals has in children's ability to be open to advanced learning, their ability to store information in long-term memory. Her definition defines culturally responsive teaching as the educator's ability to recognize students' cultural displays of learning and meaning-making, and respond positively and constructively with teaching moves that use cultural knowledge as a scaffold to connect what the student knows to new concepts and content in order to promote effective information processing, all the while the educator understands the importance of being in a relationship and having a social emotional connection to students to help create that safe space for learning. So this helps us focus on how can we improve the learning capacity of diverse students, and how can we consider the interplay of affective and cognitive aspects of teaching and learning, and then help our students build resilience and an academic mindset that helps them regulate their emotions as they encounter new learning and the information processing that helps them make sense of that learning.
That was great, Martha. And I've been reading that book by Zaretta Hammond, I just get so excited about the potential that I can see on how we can all, even though we may think we understand cultural responsive teaching, how we can grow and learn more, because it is all about that whole child and how we can help that whole child reach his or her potential. So we're just excited about the work that we're doing and the definition, the interpretation that we are taking as we move forward.
And I think one of my favorite phrases from her book is only the learner learns. And so what we do, the way that we present that learning environment, has a tremendous impact on whether or not that learner chooses to learn.
That's great. And right now, I think sometimes as adults, we are the learners in this so that we can better work with our students. Now let's think, what are some first steps that we should have as we move into a culturally responsive classroom?
Well, when I think about that, I think about three R's. I think about relationships, respect, and removing barriers. You know, we all talk about relationships, but it needs to be real. It can't be surface level. In my district, we're extremely diverse. We have 43 different countries. So we have to really understand and build a relationship based on respect. We need to understand the other cultures. arts are a great way to make that connection and understanding the culture that goes on. And we need to remove the barriers wherever we can. I know Donna talked about, I know her title is with assessment and, you know, understanding beginning steps with our students. We need to understand the tests that we have in our arsenal, that we have on our list, and we need to match the tests that we use to the needs of the child. Let's don't set them up from the beginning to not do as well as they could. I think Quayle spoke to the different programming that you can do when you look at advanced content or collaboration. We need to match the programming and the experiences that we have to the needs of our entire student body. And then I think several of you mentioned that our teachers need to understand the characteristics and needs of gifted learners. So if they know that, and we have experiences for all of our children, they can watch their children or their students, because they're children all the way, they can watch their students go through the different experiences, and then you see those gifted tendencies and those gifted characteristics bubble up through, you know, through the activities and the experiences that all children can benefit from. It's not that way we expose all children. Another thing I think we need to remember is that we need to include our parents, and we need to understand what's going on at home. It's a lot of work, but it is certainly well worth it if we build those relationships and we respect them, the students and their cultures, and then we remove any barriers that we can for their learning, as Martha talked about, so that they can truly be learners.
That's great. Anybody else have anything to add to some steps that you might have taken or you might be taking at this time?
I also, in agreement with Lisa, I too think you have to provide content and curriculum that's culturally relevant and responsive to the student population you serve. So, you know, students generally are more inclined to learn and more willing to learn when they see representation of themselves in what they're studying and what they're learning. So I think as teachers and educators, we have to be intentional about what we present to students and how do we provide curriculum and content that is inclusive of the student population that we have in our classrooms.
And I think another thing that we can't forget, you know, we talk about cultural diversity, we can't forget about poverty. So many of our students, that's the point that we're dealing with is poverty, and it has its own barriers that we need to remove.
Well, Lisa, those were really good points. Anybody else want to add to that?
Well, I think we can't, as everyone really has pointed to, we cannot overestimate the importance of the relationship between the teacher and the student, building trust. And I think that, you know, this concept of cultural responsiveness, we want to demystify that, you know, to move that from this idea to how does it look in practice? And it's not a set of strategies that one can just check off. And so I think that one first step is to really step back and evaluate your own cultural lenses and, you know, make sure that you have, as an educator, a deep understanding of the social constructs of all of the students that are represented in our classroom, and to intentionally build that alliance of trust. And sometimes it's just a matter of really stepping back and listening and really capturing the student voice that's present in your classroom.
Thank you. That was a really good point. And I think as we look back, our viewers have not had the rich conversations that we have all had in the last few months. But this working group from our Gifted Task Force at the State Department came about from some various meetings that we had, and we finally decided we needed to have several working groups. And these educators that we have today, along with another one that could not attend, have been working monthly on culture responsiveness and how, what we need to do and how we need to do it so that we can continue the work to move forward in our state. And we've been working on this for several years, as Gail said, but we want our lens to be focused on what we can do, because these relationships are critical. And so we appreciate the time that you've had today with us to give us, and this is not the only podcast on cultural responsiveness. We are excited. Part two will be coming soon, so stay tuned. These ladies will be back, and then we have a part three. So we have, this is one of the of three. We have a trilogy with this, and because we want to be really open and transparent about what we need to do with our work to be culturally responsive in our classrooms and how we can be leaders with that. So we thank you, ladies, for attending and joining us. We thank those that are listening, and there's more to come.
There is, and we're so excited about this direction that we're taking in the state of Georgia. The depth of the conversations that we've had, we hope to share with you and hopefully bring in knowledge from all across our state as to how we can help our students, how we can best meet their needs, how we can help them develop the highest level of potential that they can develop. We want to develop talent through our cultural responsiveness. And I really want to thank each of you for being here with us this morning, sharing your knowledge and your expertise. We are always so impressed by the knowledge of our groups and their willingness to come together to help our students. Thank you.